But I tell you, Michael is alive. I can feel his evil heart beating. I can see him just as I did all those years ago, behind these very same walls, staring, staring.
Welcome back, everyone, to Crime and Entertainment. I'm your host, Hollywood Wade, along with my co-host,
Jaeger Yancey, etc. It feels like I just gave information on some kind of application or something.
Well, you got an application that was accepted here on this podcast, because today, my friend, we are going to be going over the new Halloween movie, and we have a guest from that movie on this show. That's right. Say that back to yourself. The number one movie in America right now, Halloween Kills. We've got a guy that starred in it on this show. What do you think about that?
I got to ask, is there spoilers in the interview? Should people know up front that there'll be some spoiling for Halloween Kills?
Maybe, but I think most people have kind of heard by now that there is going to be a third installment. So it's not like they don't know that he didn't die. That's kind of
not quite how spoilers work, Hollywood, but
well, I mean, it's common knowledge if you're following this, you know, cause there was, and we actually,
a lot of people don't follow movie production. I mean, mild spoilers is the answer.
Okay. Well, the movie come out is 78. It's 2020 fucking one. Obviously this guy don't die very easy. So piece that together here. We're on the umpteenth installment here, the third remake version. You know, the man's not dead, people. Okay. But it's a damn good movie. Go see it. And as we said, we have one of the stars in that movie with us on this interview today. Now, when I was looking, because I was impressed with that movie, first off, what did you think about the movie?
Okay. I'm trying not to spoil anything. Vaguely, I thought it looked fantastic from a cinematography standpoint. The one from 2018, start to finish, was more my cup of tea. However, I was incredibly entertained throughout the film. That's all I can say about spoiling much else.
Yeah, I was entertained as well. And I don't know if it was maybe just me, but it seemed like that Michael was just a little bit more pissed off in this movie than he has been in previous Halloweens.
Agreed.
Yeah, I mean, that man is kicking ass left and right, and I gotta say, it's probably, and we talk about this in the interview, so folks will hear it, but this is probably one of the highest body count movies of some of your mainstays in horror, like your Freddy Krueger, your Jasons, Hellraisers, Texas Chainsaw Massacres. I mean, those guys killed off X amount of people, but it's usually people that was, you know, in the movie, he didn't just kill people for the sake of killing people. But Michael's just killing up every damn body here. I mean, he's really
over
pissed off.
30, I believe. There's a count.
I figured there 30, had to 30, be a count. I didn't have an exact count, yeah. But I figured somebody had already did it. That's got to be a record. I know it's a record for Halloween movies in general.
Oh, definitely for Halloween. Yeah. Of course, we'll put it in the slasher category for slasher horror movie. Definitely the slashing is in here. They didn't leave that out.
Okay. Now in the film, you remember the guy that played the role of, well, I guess he played the doctor, but was really a nurse. If I think
right.
That was the play on that. Okay. So him and his,
you have to see Halloween Kills, you're lost here.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause we actually talk about that, how he got a role in the first one and then he comes back to reprise that role here in the second one. Now that man's name is Michael Smallwood. Now, when I got to looking on him, I actually seen that he lives here in Charleston, which is my neck of the woods. And when I spoke with him, we actually only about 20 minutes apart from each other. Well, it's 20 minutes, no traffic. Well, sometimes that can mean an hour or more in Charleston down here with those roadways and constant wrecks every five damn minutes. But I thought that was really cool. So I reached out to him, you know, congratulate him on his success for this movie. You know, it being number one in the box office, like we said, and, you know, invited him to come on the podcast, and lo and behold, he agreed, and it was a fantastic interview. We're going to get to that here shortly. Where does Halloween rank on your, you know, all-time list? Now, I'm not talking about the particular films, just the franchise in a whole. I know you and me have always been a fan of Texas Chainsaw Massacres, Freddy Krueger's, Jason's. I mean, that's my Mount Rushmore, is Michael Myers, Leatherface, Freddy, and Jason. I wasn't so much of a big Pinhead fan. I know some people was. That really wasn't for me. So my top four are those guys. Where does Halloween rank with Jaeger Tedder?
You can appreciate Pinhead from the visuals alone. It's been almost 40 years. Some of the visuals may or may not hold up. But now, you know, in context. So Michael Myers is going to be towards, we'll say you're Mount Rushmore. I guess Mount Rushmore is four, right?
I think so, yeah. I done four.
I didn't know we were changing Mount Rushmore heads there. All right, so number one is Freddy. Two's going to be Jason. Jason's got more movies. I'm saying that in English, right?
No better,
more
yeah.
movies than Leatherface.
Yes.
Who, honestly, the first one is really, okay, the second one's a different vibe, but the first really is one of my favorite pieces of cinema. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll put out one movie. I guess I'll move Leatherface above Jason. Can I do a tie? Is there a 2-2A?
Yeah, sure. There's a 2-2A.
Sure. In the Hellraiser movies, I've unfortunately just seen so many bad ones of that. I don't really have Hellraiser up there for me. So you're Michael Myers, your slasher here. I don't know if you consider Hellraiser a slasher. By the end, it was. Some of those straight to VOD ones for sure were just schlock, if you can say that word. That's a new word for me, schlock. So Michael would be towards the bottom only because I just feel like the character is just a little too cold for my taste to really gravitate towards. Mm-hmm. And again, so many rough sequels. And if somebody's going with Freddy, how horrible sequels? Nah. I'll debate this. I think Freddy had way better sequel. Evil Dead's not a slasher, so you leave that out. There's been some people who've done some, we'll just say like fun talking head pieces where charting who's had more entertaining movies. Evil Dead kind of can win that out, but we're not talking Evil Dead. We're talking slasher genre. So Michael's fine. I don't hate him. I'm not going to boycott him. Well, I want anybody to think he hates Michael. No. It is just not going to be my go-to if I want to throw a slasher on in the streaming service. I was about to say put a DVD on, but I haven't touched DVD, I don't think, since 2012.
Well, I actually own Halloween, the original, in 4K. It is a great piece of cinema. But in my opinion, as far as the Freddy franchise is concerned, the only one that I didn't really care for through all those was probably Part 5, which is The Dream Child. Now, 4, I absolutely loved, as we've already interviewed Lisa Wilcox earlier. You can go back and look at that in the archives, or listen to it, rather. We got a video interview on YouTube and the audio on here. We talked about 4 and 5, but 4, I think, was just so good, it really set the bar, and 5 just couldn't quite measure up, in my opinion. Looking back on it now, as we talked about in that interview, I can kind of appreciate some of the aspects it was dealing with a little more. I probably seen that movie a little bit too young to understand some of the stuff that was going on at that time behind the scenes. But still, even when I went back and rewatched it now, 4 was way better for me to sit through. So that was kind of the only really stinker in there. Now, Halloween has got to be 3. I was not a fan of 3 at all.
Halloween. Okay, hold on. Halloween 3 without Michael Myers?
Yes, that was without the shape. Michael Myers.
The shape. I can't remember that movie well. This debate is going on online. Halloween 3, Exorcist 3 are actually good movies. I need to go in and check them out now. I don't know.
Maybe I need to rewatch concept. 3. Maybe so, because I just remember it was something along the lines of like a certain TV commercial, and when that commercial come on, I want to say the fucking kids just went batshit crazy or something. It was something along those lines, but I know Michael Myers was not in the film. Now, he came back in Part 4. Well, obviously
Return of Michael Myers.
Yeah. Now I like 4 and I like 5. I mean, I like them really all. How did you feel about the Rob Zombie remakes 1 and 2?
I felt like the first one of the remake had kind of an idea, and that second one had to be one of the most brutal viewing experiences ever in a theater. The audience, you could feel them getting restless with that second one. The first part two remake, I don't know how to categorize it. There was a lot of stories that Rob was making those movies that just got trashed the opposite. So I don't know how into some of those he might have been. And it was so weird because it was like a packed house watching that second one. I don't think I saw his first one in theaters. But whoa. Let's say it, I guess, probably the better. I will say with John Carpenter, when he touched it and done the soundtrack, always got the best soundtrack in horror for my money. Of course, a legit soundtrack because we all like "Let's Buzz." That's a deep cut, pun intended. Carpenter killed the soundtrack again here for Halloween Kill. It was great. It was something, you know, my 5.1 I'm rolling with surround sound system. So I give it props that on that. It's very memorable. Freddy's only got the kids singing the "Stay Up Late" and "Freddy Coming for You." Doesn't quite laugh as hard as Carpenter's piano. I think he used piano. Fuck, I don't know. Keyboard. I'm no musician.
Yeah, when it comes to soundtracks, really for me, 4 was probably the best music-wise. And now, again, that was Renee Harlin. And that was when they kind of, you know, said MTV Freddy, where Freddy became a little bit more cool instead of just 100% dream killer.
I don't remember a thing from that soundtrack. I have nothing
I've got a few in my Spotify. I don't think they're necessarily still, you know, big names today, but they were catchy little tunes, and I've got a few of them that I had to Shazam to get the names of them, but it was pretty cool. I'll say Halloween 2, Rob Zombie, it felt like to me, maybe kind of like what you said, 1 was a success, so they rushed 2, but they forgot they actually had to have a movie plot for it to be a decent movie. And that was kind of my deal. And I'll take nothing away from Rob Zombie. I love him and his work in the House of a Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects and 3 from Hell. I really enjoyed 31 that he did. You know, nothing away from Rob, but 2 to me was kind of an egg. And it definitely got revitalized here when Danny McBride, of all people are going to associate that man with, you know, his more comedic roles for sure. But when Danny McBride and the boys took over here, the Halloween franchise, it really did get a resurgence, so to speak, because I loved the 2018 and I loved Halloween Kills, and I'm sure I love Halloween Ends, as we talked about. Now, one thing we did clear up, and I don't want to spoil too much of the interview here. We're going to get right into it in just a second. I thought that they shot the second and third part all together. Did you hear that?
I didn't hear that. Yeah. Okay. That's not the case.
That is not the case. And we're going to hear that and a whole lot more here with our interview with actor and star of Halloween Kills, Mr. Michael Smallwood, here on Crime and Entertainment. Welcome back, everyone, to Crime and Entertainment. We have a very special guest here with us today. Now, if you don't recognize this man right off the bat, I know you either going to see his movie within the next week because it's just a rite of passage right here around Halloween. He is the star of one of the biggest movies in the world. It's still the number one grossing movie right now, right?
Yeah, I think so.
There you go. Michael Smallwood, ladies and gentlemen, star of Halloween Kills. Michael, how are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
Hey, man, I'm doing great. We are glad to have you on the show. Now, right off the bat, we'll kind of start from the beginning, you know, and get to Halloween Kills. But right off the bat, I got to ask, how was it making that film? Was it pretty cool?
It was like a really cool experience. I was on set for a month, all night shoots, if you can imagine how that goes. So basically, you know, you're spending the entirety of your time, you know, getting there at 6 p.m. and leaving set at 8 a.m. and trying to get some sleep in between and living that vampire lifestyle for several weeks at a time. Takes a little bit to adjust to at first, but man, like that movie was so cool to get to like work on, and some of the stuff we got to do, some of the stuff I got to do in that movie I had never done before. Mm-hmm. And And some of it was stuff that, like, I don't think, like, not many people have really done. And we all had to, like, on set be like, hey, how are we going to do this? Let's figure this out. But yeah, I mean, like, just an incredible team, an incredible crew, and great cast. I mean, just some of the best weeks of my career, honestly.
Yeah, I worked a third shift schedule for a long time, and that was pretty challenging, just having to acclimate your body to being up when it's not supposed to be up. That can get kind of grueling. Even when you get plenty of sleep, you still feel tired because you're up at the times that your body's not really, you know, expecting you to be up under normal circumstances. So
my parents did it for many years off and on. And at a certain point while filming it, I was like, oh, is this what this was like for them? Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
No matter how much sleep you get, it seems like you're always exhausted, but you guys put it together.
Yeah. And like, for me, like I'm a really light sleeper, so I can't just turn off and go to sleep at a certain point and then like not wake up. So I would like fall asleep at like 8:30 or 9 in the morning and then wake up at like 12, and my body would be like, all right, cool, like you got to get up and start the day. And I'd be like, no, our day doesn't start for another 6 hours, like go back to sleep. Like,
yeah. I had to have the blackout curtains and stuff when I was home, because I it's hard for me to sleep in daylight because it pierced through the window there, and I had to, you know, go all the extra 9 yards just to keep it as dark as possible so I could get some sleep during the daylight and function, you know, good at the job. But we're going to get more into Halloween, but I guess, like I said, let's start from the beginning here. Like, did you always have a passion to be an actor, or did that, you know, you get that a little bit later?
I think I've basically always had it. My parents will tell stories about, like, so apparently before I could officially learn to read, right? Like before I could actually read, I would memorize the books that were being read to me. And so then my parents would like have parties or have people over, and I would go up to those people and be like, hey, look, I can read. And then I would just recite the book and turn the page at the right place. So I've always kind of been doing it, but like, I really picked it up in school. Like, we did plays at my elementary school. I played Santa Claus in second grade, and like, we auditioned. So I had to like earn the part of Santa Claus. And then, but I got really serious about it in junior high, like middle school, junior high. I got really serious about acting. I really wanted to do it. I've wanted to be a part of movies, like as a career. Like, I saw Jurassic Park in the theater, like opening night. And I was like, whatever this is, like, however they make this, I want to be a part of that.
Yeah.
Like, whatever that is. Like, I don't want to do anything else but work on making something like this. And so I've just been like an acting fan ever since. I also, like, I saw Jurassic Park, and then the next year, like, I got really into professional wrestling. And so I've wanted to be an actor ever since.
Oh yeah. Well, that's a somewhat of an acting career too, professional wrestling. I was a huge wrestling fan coming up. Yeah, man.
It's live theater, man. It's my favorite form of live theater.
Yeah. I was, I don't know how old you are. I was big in the WWE era, or the Attitude era. That was my prime time of watching, man. I liked the old school. You know, I was, of course, a Hogan fan coming up, you know, WrestleManias and stuff like that when he was with the WWE or F at the time. But then when he went over to the NWO and they had that over there in the Attitude era in WWE, I was at my peak fandom for that, for sure. That was good stuff back in those days.
Yeah, I've been a wrestling fan ever since, like, 90, since 94, since WrestleMania 10. I've been off and on, like, a huge fan. Like, I'm still a fan today. Like, my wife and I have been to a couple of WrestleManias. Like,
Ten, that was the ladder match, right? Yep. That was the first ladder match with Shawn and Razor. That was good stuff. I can't remember who main event in 10. I can't remember right off the bat.
Bret Hart and Yokozuna.
That's right. Okay, that was where they had the two matchups.
Two world title matches.
They split the Rumble there. All right. So where did you grow up, you know, as a youngster? I understand. I found out by researching you a little bit that you're actually, you know, here in Charleston. And I was like, man, that's pretty cool. You know, this guy right here is representing right here in Chucktown. So did you grow up here? Were you?
No, I'm from Baltimore originally.
Baltimore.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I grew up in Baltimore, and we moved to South Carolina, upstate, like Union area, right before I started junior high. And then I came to Charleston in 2004 for college, and loved it. Loved going to CFC. Graduated in 2009 and worked in Atlanta for a year, and then I moved back here, and I've been here ever since.
Okay. Now, when you realized, you know, you were going to kind of pursue this acting gig, you know, full-fledged and head-on, what was like your first, I guess, I know a lot of people will intern and things like that. What was your first paid gig for doing something in this, Ooh. Whether it be acting or, you know, script, whatever you had to do in it, extra screenwriting, whatever the case may be? What was your first paid gig?
That's a really good question, and no one ever asked me this question. So my very first ever paid acting gig was in college, actually. We did a production of, oh man, I'm trying to remember exactly. I'm trying to remember exactly which show it was. I think it was Cabaret that we did. We did a bonus performance or something. And because of that, the cast got paid. So they, like, my very first acting paycheck was like $75 for this performance of this show in college. I think I still have the check here somewhere. Like, wow. I still have at least have a copy of it. Like I was like, I'm keeping this. It's in my files somewhere in my garage. And then, so that was my very first like paycheck ever as an actor. My first like professional gig was after I graduated college, I got a gig working for the CDC down in Atlanta, filming a video about like getting STD tested. And that was my first ever professional film gig.
So now I was looking up, checking out your IMDb. I got to get into a few of the things you got working there. The first one that caught my eye was Scooby-Doo and the Manson Murders. You got to tell me, because I couldn't find a whole lot about that here. You got to give me the lowdown on this. I was a huge Scooby-Doo fan coming up, man. I was a big fan of the cartoon. You know, I always wanted to figure out who was doing what, but You're mixing Scooby-Doo and the Manson Murders. I got to understand what this is about and when I can watch this and what the deal is here.
So you can watch it on YouTube right now.
Okay.
It's a play by this guy, Kevin Lanigan, who is wonderful. A really cool guy who lives in New York. And he wrote this play about the Scooby-Doo gang showing up and having to deal with Charlie Manson and the Manson family. And how the Manson family end up like influencing and like corrupting the Scooby gang. It's very funny, super absurd. I got to play Fred, which was a lot of fun. And yeah, we did it last year. So like during the pandemic, it's like a Zoom play, and he put it up on YouTube. So like, yeah, you can just go to YouTube and find that play and watch it. It is very funny, especially like you said, if you're a fan of like Scooby-Doo, he does a really great job of like paying off those characters, but also tying them into like that like Manson family craziness. It's kind of like a little bit like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, right? Because it has like Manson family stuff going on too.
Yeah.
But with the Scooby-Doo gang.
Yeah. I what'd you think of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood? I liked it. What do you think about it?
I didn't actually like that movie. There were things in it I liked. I loved everything Leo was doing. Like mm-hmm. Leonardo DiCaprio's storyline in that movie, I love. I love his performance. It's some of the best work he's ever done. It's a really cool story. All the Brad Pitt stuff, I just didn't care about. And I just was like, this is too long. I don't like this character. I don't really like the stuff that he's doing in the movie. Like, I would have loved that movie if it was just about Leo, mm-hmm. but because it's not, it's like a movie that has like stuff I really like in it, but it's also way too long. It's so overindulgent. I couldn't get into it.
Well, I think a lot of people were expecting something different, you know, maybe more focused in on the Mansons or something like that. That may have threw people for a loop too, because you kept waiting on that to come up and happen. And I guess it just never really did. I don't know if he done that as kind of respect issue to not really go into, you know, all the stuff that happened with Sharon Tate. I'm not sure. I've read a few things, and I know that parts of her family weren't happy with some of the things that they portrayed in there.
I'm sure. And, you know, Tarantino has this whole thing like of doing these like revisionist history mm-hmm. movies, right? Especially lately, like the back half of his career has been all of this, like,
oh yeah,
Inglourious Basterds, Django, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, like these revisionist history takes, right? And I don't have a problem with it. I think that's a really interesting way of tackling these like time periods and telling these very interesting stories. So that wasn't really my issue. I just, like I said, the pieces of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood didn't work for me. Like watching it, I was just like, I don't like Brad Pitt's character. I don't like, you know, some of the scenes are good. Like I said, some of the scenes are really good. Some of the scenes I was like, this is just in here to take up time.
Yeah.
Like, cut some of this. Like, and like I said, and what makes it worse is that in the middle of all that is this really good Leonardo DiCaprio movie. like the scenes with Leo and that little girl in the set of the TV show, like yes. That is such good movie. Like that stuff is awesome. And so I was just like, man, if you would cut out the parts of this that are really good, this could have been a great movie. But it you know, it's just got too much other stuff going on. And some of, you know, I like Tarantino as a director, but he has, you know, he's got some habits that, like, you know, if he spends too much time doing some of his habits, you're like, okay, come on, man. Like now I'm out of the movie now. Like, and that's one where I was like, oh, you're kind of like taking some of your, and I kind of felt this way about The Hateful Eight too. Like you're taking things about some of your movies that have really worked, but now you're just spending way too much time doing all of them. To the point where I'm like, come on, man. Like I liked your movies, but these last two, they're getting too long. They're getting kind of indulgent. Like
Pulp Fiction worked good the way he does stuff because there were so many different sub stories in the movie that worked. And you didn't really you didn't get tired of any one particular part of the story. Or at least I didn't. Jackie Brown, to me, you could see where certain elements were starting to get to kind of where he is now, where things were just not overly stretched out, but just stretched out just a little bit, which I still enjoy Jackie Brown.
I like Jackie Brown a lot. I feel like a lot of people just haven't seen it, but I like that one a lot.
Oh, yeah. I thought that was I think Samuel L. Jackson's even quoted as saying that was like his most favorite movie to do ever, not just of Quentin's, but just period. Yeah, really, really good piece. I think Robert Forster, I think, was in there. He just passed away not too long ago.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, Pam Grier. There was a lot of big-name people. Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
Chris Bobby Tucker even had a little,
like, great cast.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, so that's cool stuff, man. Yeah, what we got here, and I'm going to just circle back to it one more time. We got here talking. I'm going to go watch it as soon as this interview's over. Scooby-Doo and the Manson Murders, so be sure to go check that out.
Go watch it. It was a lot of fun to get to work on that project. Like, Kevin sent me the script, and I was like, dude, this is wild. Like, we're going to record this? You're going to put it up? Yeah, absolutely. I'm in.
Now, you're actually in the first Halloween, well, Let me clarify. You're in the remake of Halloween from 2018. Now, there's been some remakes and whatnot. You know, Rob Zombie tried his hand at it. But you're actually in that one, too. Now, how did you go about getting in position to get that role for that first one?
So they filmed Halloween 2018 here in town,
yes.
In Charleston.
Yeah, and I was actually supposed to be an extra, and okay. I wasn't able to get off work. It was like one of the scenes, I think, where they're having a party. I was just supposed to be like, you know, probably wouldn't even know it was me, but I would. And I wanted to do it, but I couldn't get off of work to get there. But yeah, I did see that they were filmed it all down here, and that's really cool.
So they filmed it here. And one of the things they did, Rough House, you know, held auditions, right? So they brought in a bunch of people to read for different parts. And I got to go in, I got to read for it. I got to, you know, be in the room with David and Danny and, you know, a bunch of the Rough House team. And, you know, I read for like a townsperson. I read for just like, you know, they're filling out Haddonfield and they're trying to find actors to play these various characters. And so I went in, I read for a scene where we stumble. I don't even think the scene was in the movie, but like they had written up a scene where, like, you know, we're looking at some bodies that Michael has hung up and we're reacting to it. And so I read for that, and then I left, and I was like, well, I don't know what's going to come from that. Maybe they'll call me back in for a character or something. Or maybe nothing will happen with it. That happens all the time, you know? And a couple weeks later, sure enough, my agent called me and was like, hey, they've got a part for you that like you to play. Do you want to do it? And I was like, yeah, it's Halloween. Of course I want to do it.
Yes.
Like, you know, this is one of the greatest movie franchises of all time. It's my wife, but one of my wife's favorite horror franchises. Like, we own all except for the two movies she hates.
Three's got to be one of those.
What?
Three's got to be one of those.
Three we don't own and Resurrection we don't own.
Is that one with Busta Rhymes?
Yeah, that's the that's the reality show one with Busta Rhymes. Yeah. We also don't own the Rob Zombie ones because we have issues with the Rob Zombie ones, which is mainly that he gives Michael Myers a backstory. Like, don't give Michael Myers, don't explain the killings. Michael Myers is like the perfect movie monster because we don't know why he killed anybody. But like that's my issue with Rob Zombie's movies. He spent like 30 minutes making me go, well, yeah, if I'm Michael, I want to kill these people too. It's like, I shouldn't think that. But then, I got the script, and then I went to set basically, and did my scene in 2018, which is the long one take through the neighborhood, with Carmela and I, you know, heading off to our party, and Carmela's standing there staring at him, and is he going to kill her? And he doesn't. He walks away. But yeah, I mean, that was pretty much it. Like, they liked us from the call. They brought us in to play those parts. And I was like, well, that's such a cool Easter egg. Like, no matter, I've got to be in that really cool shot with Michael Myers. I kind of thought that was it until they called me and were like, hey, can we bring your character back for the sequel? Like, yeah, you absolutely can.
Yeah, you can't find a shorter answer than yes, I don't think, for that question. Now, were you always a fan of horror in general? Not just, you know, the Halloween series, but was horror kind of one of your favorite genres? Or,
you know, it wasn't growing up. I mean, you know, as a kid, horror is horror, right? You know, you see a few horror movies, they're the ones that scare you and the ones that don't. And then as I got older, I was really into, you know, I mean, I'm a kid of the 90s, so Scream is the greatest horror movie that's ever been made.
Yeah.
And loved Scream, loved all those movies. But really, like, the 90s teen slasher genre was my horror, right? But I kind of fell out of it as a genre in the 2000s. I wasn't really a big fan of like a lot of the like torture porn craze. I don't really do well, like, I don't really care about ghost stories. So once we started doing like either torture movies or ghost stories, I was like, okay, I'm kind of done with this genre now. Like, I don't have anything for it. But I, you know, I've come back around in the past few years, especially like the last decade or so, because like, man, the horror movies have been so good for 10 years. Like, they've been wonderfully about so many different things. Some of the best movies of the year consistently are horror movies now. And I've spent a lot of time on horror movie sets now. Like, you know, a lot of my friends who do independent film, they make horror. I wrote and directed a horror film myself this year. I've done these two Halloween movies. Like, it's been a rediscovery of horror as a genre over the last 10 years. I've really loved it. And I've come to appreciate some of the older movies. I used to teach, and I teach film history, and like movies like Psycho and Halloween are on my curriculum because, you know, I'm not going to not teach them. They're incredible landmarks of cinema history. So yeah, I mean, I've certainly come back around to a much deeper appreciation of horror as a genre, in the past 10 years, which has been great because I've been able to discover a lot of movies that I missed, you know, when I wasn't really into the genre, discovering a lot of things now as an adult that as a kid, I just was too scared to watch or just didn't think about it the right way. I'm a huge fan of the genre now.
Yeah. Horror has always been one of my favorites. I mean, coming up, you know, the forefathers of horror was, you know, Michael Myers, Freddy Krueger, Jason Voorhees, and depending on who you were, I wasn't the hugest Hellraiser fan, but I know Pinhead was always there. But then it was Texas Chainsaw Massacre for me was kind of like the top four. And I loved all of those films. But like you said, when Scream came out, it kind of took things to another level. It got out of those, you know, superhumanly powerful guys. And it was just, you know, this is the guy next door type of thing. And then it kind of not necessarily made fun, but it was kind of the start of that dark. You can still mix your comedy in with the horror. And that was the only movie, I think, to this day that I've ever seen in the theater more than twice. I seen that four times, the first one. Yeah. My sister took me to see it because I was underage, obviously. So my sister took me to see it the first time. Then I told my other sister about it. They actually lived in different states. We were out of town in North Carolina. And we came back I told her, the other sister that I had here, about it. So she took me, and then I talked my mom into taking me to see it again. So I wound up seeing it three times in the theater. Yeah, it was a good
one. I've seen many movies multiple times in the theater. But yeah, I don't think I saw the original Scream in the theater. No, I wouldn't have. I would have been too young to have seen it in the theater, but I definitely watched it on home video when it came out.
Oh, yeah. Now I rewatch a lot of stuff, you know, because I have a collection of movies this massive, because I love going by, you know, back and watching old stuff in any genre. But yeah, Scream was definitely one of those ones, because it kept you guessing of who you thought it was. And then the fact they threw the, you know, the big swing in there, there was two. And yeah. Then so I would rewatch it again to try to figure, all right, well, this kid was probably Stu, or this kid was probably Billy, you know, trying to figure out who was who, because that was kind of what they were doing. One of them would go somewhere to have an alibi, and then the other person would kill. So it was just,
you can actually go through and like track. People have done it, like gone through and like tracked, like this one has to be him. This one has to be. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you see the trailer for the new one they're about to drop?
Oh yeah. Looks oh, I good, love man. The trailer for the new one. Like, I'm Sidney Prescott. Of course, yeah. I've got a gun. Like, yeah, you are. Of course, you do. Like, what I love about Sidney as a final girl is that Sidney learns as a final girl, right? So you watch that first movie, and then you go into the next one and the ones after. Like, Sidney is no longer acting like, oh, how could this be happening or what's going on? Like, Sidney has adapted to each situation, so you watch her not make the same mistakes over and over again. It's so cool. Watching all of the movies and seeing her as a character evolve through them. One of my favorite film characters of all time.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you mentioned that you were a teacher. Now, what school did you teach at? COC or?
No, I used to teach at a private school on John's Island for a couple of years. And now I am the I'm the lead teacher for Pure Theater here in Charleston. I run our youth companies. So when we have students this summer, I directed a whole production with like 18 kids in like 2.5 weeks, which was a lot of fun. I do private lessons now with some of my students until we can, you know, get back into regular in-person lessons. Mm-hmm. And occasionally I'll do playwriting classes and stuff like that just for anybody. Like I did one last year during the pandemic that was like, for like teaching people how to write screenplays. That was really cool.
Yeah.
I used to work for the North Charleston Office of Cultural Affairs, like doing after school programs for various schools throughout the state throughout Charleston. So I've been teaching off and on at various places since 2015 or so. And I love it. I'll do anything for students. I actually just, one of the things I did this year was direct a show for CFC. I did one last year as well, and I directed a play this year for the College of Charleston. So I love giving back to like young aspiring performers. That's like one of my favorite things to do.
Oh yeah, absolutely, man. That's nothing better than be able to give back, you know, when you've kind of starting to achieve what you're looking for, you know, you want to go back and help you and whatever, you know, areas that helped you along the way, you know, show appreciation for that. That's always a great thing. Now, you mentioned when you were interviewing there, you were with Danny McBride. Now, not a lot of people are going to associate Danny McBride with more of his comedic roles, he's not in the movie, but like you said, he's, you know, behind the scenes.
He's one of the writers.
Yeah. And a lot of people are going to relate, you know, with him, you know, Pineapple Express, Eastbound and Down, a lot of your comedic roles. Now, him getting over to the scarier side, at least in this Halloween, you know, franchise here that he's got, I thought it was phenomenal. I mean, I really enjoyed the first Halloween and now Halloween Kills, and I'm sure I'm going to enjoy, you know, the last one, Halloween Ends. Is it really going to end?
I don't know. I haven't read the script. I don't know. Like, they just finished the script a couple of weeks ago, apparently, and I have not read it, and I don't see why they would send it to me.
So let's clear something up real quick. Is it already shot? Told they shot it in sequence, so that's not true.
No.
Okay.
So the original plan before the pandemic and everything was we shot Halloween Kills in 2019.
Yep.
And then the plan was to wrap that movie. I think they were going to go ahead and write the sequel, and then they were supposed to film Halloween Ends this time last year. So in theory, Kills was supposed to come out last year, right? It was supposed to come out in 2020.
Yeah, and
the theory is that this actually would have been the weekend that Ends came out originally. Okay. You know, there's going to be a year between Kills and Ends, and like we should be watching the finale. You know, in a non-pandemic world, we would have been watching the finale right now, in theory.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, a number of things got in the way. Obviously, the pandemic is probably the biggest and first one. But there, you know, that team is also working on Righteous Gemstones, so they just wrapped season two of Righteous Gemstones. So I think working on Halloween Ends will be the next thing they work on. But no, they haven't shot the movie yet.
Okay. Now, do they shoot the Gemstones? Is that at the Citadel Mall? Is that where they shoot the Gemstones? That section that they
have off down there? Citadel Mall is one of the locations. That's where the Gemstone, like Locust Point Center is and stuff like that. Yeah. I actually got to work on 2 weeks of that this season.
Yeah, I was about to say, you made an appearance on there too.
So. Yeah, I'm going to show up in a couple of episodes of season two. And that's a blast of a show to work on too. Yeah,
I bet it is.
And to get to work with Danny in front of the camera, as well as like, you know, him having written Halloween. Mm-hmm. But like working on Righteous Gemstones was really where I got to like, oh great, I'm getting to like work with Danny. Like, this is cool.
Yeah. I mean, and like I said, when you get hooked into somebody watching them, you know, especially when you first start seeing him, you know, we mentioned Eastbound and Down, like I said, Pineapple Express and other movies, you kind of just only see him in that comedic role. Now, there's another guy that you were talking about the last few years, some Halloween or some horror movies that's been putting out some good stuff. James Wan has got to be on that list for kicking out. Now, he's the guy behind The Conjuring and a lot of those other ones that are coming out. I mean, how do you feel about those films? Because I'm a fan of it. I didn't like The Conjuring 1. I liked the 2. And then I liked all the Insidiouses are pretty good.
I have seen one Conjuring movie. I just did it a couple. The one that came out this year on HBO Max.
I have not seen that.
I don't like. I haven't really gotten into the Conjuring universe. I am not. I don't do ghosts or like demon possession movies or stuff because I think they're scary. I don't believe in ghosts or demon possession stuff, and it's to a point where like I can't even suspend disbelief long enough to watch the movie. Like, the minute a movie starts and they're like, hey, our house is haunted, I will sometimes out loud just go, no, it's not. And then I can't, I'm like, everything that happens after that, I'm like, well, this wouldn't be happening because your house isn't haunted. That's not a real thing that happens. And same thing with demon possession. Like, I just don't buy into it enough. So like, those movies don't interest me at all because I just can't watch them. Yeah. Like, it's not fair to them. Honestly, it's not fair to the movie. It's like, I'll just start watching and be like, what? Right. But that's not, but this isn't real. And my brain won't even go like, yeah, Michael, it's a movie. Like, nothing in the movie is real. Like, I just can't do it. So I have only seen one Conjuring movie, and I haven't seen like any of the Insidiouses or any of that stuff. Like, because they're not like, they're just not a genre of movie I watch. Yeah. So I haven't seen any of those. And the one Conjuring movie I did watch this year, I was very confused.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Well, I haven't seen any of them. So I was like, right. Am I supposed to know who these people are? What's happening?
The first one I remember, which some movies have a habit of doing this, they give away about every big scare or big moment in the trailer. So nothing's really shocking or surprising. And that's what I kind of found with the first one. Now the second one I liked, and the third one, like I said, I haven't actually had the time to sit down and watch that. I've been crazy busy these last few months. And so a lot of films have gotten by me that I want to try to plant down and watch, but I'm a habit of going back to what I know works. And sometimes I'll just rewatch certain shows and all that. Now, one of the shows, and it come around the same time Scream did, they're doing a show on that. The I Know What You Did Last Summer series on Amazon Prime.
I saw that? They were working on that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I like the I Know What You Did Last Summer movies. I mean, it was kind of not a page out of Scream because that was already a book before then, but now they changed the book. It didn't follow the book. How the movie went anyways. But yeah, what did you think about that series? Did you like that?
I really liked the first one when I saw it back in the day. Mm-hmm. I didn't really like the second one as much.
Yeah.
And it's also a series I feel like I've been like for years been like, wow, of all the things that have gotten remade, I can't believe no one's touched that one. Like, I can't believe that hasn't been brought back or remade until now.
Yeah.
Right. I'd kind of be interested to see what the Amazon one is up to, because I think it's an interesting premise, like people who are kind of tied to something and fear that somebody knows what they're doing.
Absolutely.
But I mean, ultimately, like, I Know What You Did Last Summer movies can't hold a candle to Scream. No. Scream's just so good.
Yeah. Scream is on another level. Now, the guy that does the show with me, his name's Jaeger. He's my childhood friend. And we worked together after high school for a little bit at a radio station in Florence, South Carolina. Now, the office was in like the third floor of like a 5-story building. And so they had just like a big section of it. So it had a bunch of different multiple radio stations in this thing. And it used to be a creepy place at nighttime. We used to have to stay up there and run like NASCAR races and stuff like that. So if they were racing at night, you wouldn't get out of there to sometimes, 11 o'clock. If you kept wrecking and having, caution flags, it was late by the time you got out of there. So you go out and there's this hall, this long hall. I mean, it was really creepy because if you're up there running that, nobody else is up there for anything at that point in time. So we kicked around the idea and we actually wrote a script and everything and we're starting to shoot it. And then they told us we couldn't keep doing it up there, but we wrote a script called Caller 13 about a guy that would call the radio station. You're doing a contest, a giveaway. It was caller number 12 was the winner, but you answered it and it was like caller number 13. Sorry, you're not the winner. And he just gets pissed and he starts stalking. And like, we were going to come up with these shots. We were looking down out of the window and see him down there on the ground. And then just him be in there, like not a lot of action. Cause of course we're shooting this on, $100 Best Buy cameras at the time or something, but just be it him being in there, but the guy not know that he's there, like standing in the corner. So very Michael Myers esque, but like I said, they found out we were shooting up there and they told us we couldn't do it. So it kind of threw a monkey.
That's a good idea though. You should go back to that. That's a pretty good idea. Have you seen The Vast of Night?
No, I have not.
Came out last year. It was on Amazon. It's still on Amazon, I should say. It came out last year, and I think you'd like it because if you like, that's a really cool idea. Vast of Night is another movie about people who are who work a late night radio show, but they get a call in from somebody who is talking about like something that somebody sees something in the sky, and then these like two teenagers are like trying to track down what it is, and they're staying on the radio, and they end up like getting caught up in this like this guy calls in with this like conspiracy thing that's going on. It. Really cool movie, very tense, very cool, like conspiracy radio movie, like The Vast of Night. Definitely check that out. It was one of my favorite movies from last year.
Yeah, I have to give that a look because that's accurate, man. I got some wild and crazy phone calls up there because I wasn't an actual on-air talent. I was just there. So our job was to answer the phone, take requests or whatever. And they had an AM station that would, play like Rush Limbaugh, stuff like that,
Sure.
And there would be people that would call in there and have wild and crazy stories and just want to talk, just want to have conversations. And sometimes if you're in there by yourself and you ain't really got nothing going on, it's not a bad thing. So you would entertain those phone calls and man, there was some crazy stuff being said. Like, and that's what I was like, if somebody really did get offended or get upset, like
they know where you are.
Yeah, everybody knows where you're at. Like, if you win stuff, they say we're at the BTC building, third floor, there's huge signs on the door, and I'm just like, it's not that hard for somebody to try to track you down. And at the time, I don't even think they had locks on them doors down there.
My first job ever in high school was at an AM radio station.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I worked nights, but it was like right on the main street and like it was right next to the window. So like I never felt unsafe, but I used to work nights. I used to like babysit the equipment for Atlanta Braves games. And like I used to have to work on Sunday morning and it was a country music radio station. And so on Sunday mornings, I had to play both Christian country music and Christian Western music. Because country and Western are two different kinds of music.
Yes.
Apparently. And I used to have to read obituaries on the air.
Oh, wow.
Every Sunday.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep. That was my first job in college, was reading obituaries live on the air on Sundays. And all the other stuff I had to do at the radio station.
Yeah.
And people would you had to be like very specific because people would call in and be like, it's actually pronounced this. And we had one guy who would call in every week. He would want to know what song was currently playing on the radio. He would want to know the time. And he would want to know there was something else. And it was very specific. And he'd call every week. And I could never figure it out because I was like, wait, but he can hear the song. And he could like cell phone, like you could, he could find out the time some other way. I just never understood. Like, but he would do it every week. I was warned on like my first day, like, hey, when you're here on Sunday, the sky is going to call. I don't think anyone knew. I don't know if anybody actually knew who, I don't remember, but like, we might not have even known this guy's name, but like my friend was like, you know, he's going to call every week. He wants to know these three things. Just tell them to him. He'll say something. You probably won't be able to understand it. And then hang up. I was like, okay, weird.
Yeah. I never had anybody quite repetitive as that, but there are, I almost have to use the term your regular callers that you know that they're going to be on there. Sometimes that wasn't a bad thing. Like if I thought I hit a certain button to go back and, you know, there was a few seconds of dead air, they could call right quick and let you know, hey, it's not back on. What's going on? And I'd have to look and be like,
especially in a small town, they'll call immediately. Oh, someone's got that radio station. Yes. On. They will let you know. Hey, by the way, there's nothing on the air. We can't hear it. Like what? Oh no. Is the equipment messed up? Hang on. I'll fix that.
Yeah. Yeah. That was sometimes it was a safety valve for you for sure. But yeah, man, well, that's cool. We got some similar backgrounds there in the radio because that's what we did a lot was board operating and stuff like that. And that kind of set us into this. He's a photographer down here. Now, I was still a welder. We spoke about this earlier, but I'm a welder by trade. So that's kind of what I've been doing. But I've always had a love of films and how not just the films of watching them, but, you know, how they were made. I was a big fan of if I'm going to sit down and watch a movie, then I want to go watch the documentary or not, you know, documentary if it's made, but watch it with commentary from the director or an actor and see like, okay, well, this is, you know, we had issues shooting this for this reason. And now doing this podcast, it kind of just gives me, I didn't need the motivation, but it's like extra motivation to dive into certain things that I like. Like one of our last episodes, we covered Don Simpson. Now, I don't know if you Don Simpson is, but in the 80s and early 90s, pretty much any hot, high-powered action movie that you watched, he had something to do with. Top Gun, Days of Thunder, The Rock, Bad Boys. And he pretty much lived his life just like he did his movies, high-paced, no brakes, all gas, fueled with drugs and about anything else. And he met an untimely early end, but if he could have stayed on a straight and narrow, man, there's no telling. Him and Jerry Bruckheimer were partners, and they were together, and they kind of, you know, made it together and they were coming up. They done Flashdance, I think was one of the biggest ones to start. And then it was Top Gun and then Days of Thunder. And then on after that, they did The Rock. And around the time, I think it was when they finished The Rock was when they split. Jerry Bruckheimer could tell that Don was kind of getting a little too reckless and they split. So Jerry obviously went on to have a great career. I mean, he's done a lot of stuff since then. Everybody knows who Jerry Bruckheimer is, even people that aren't really, you know, knowledgeable of directors and producers, but he's, you know, he's got his hands on a lot of stuff. But yeah, Don had a interesting life, man, because they filmed the movie Days of Thunder. A portion of that, I don't know if you ever seen it, but it's got Tom Cruise and he's like, it's not NASCAR. They don't call it NASCAR in there, but he's a race car driver. And, One of the scenes where he wins his first race was actually shot in my hometown where I grew up in Darlington, South Carolina. So that movie was kind of a big deal. You know, you got Tom Cruise coming here. And at that time, Tom was just like, you know, he was top of the mountain, man. He had already come off of Top Gun. So he was the big deal. So to have him in our small little town, that was a huge deal. But yeah, I've never seen that movie, but
I do remember at the like King's Dominion, they used to have like a Days of Thunder, like car, like 4D car ride thing. And I used to ride that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's that. And that we talked about it on that episode of the podcast. That movie was actually the flop. Like they had signed, a deal, I think like a 4-picture deal or whatever. And it was pretty substantial money at the time. They both went and bought like matching Ferraris. And you know, when they done Days of Thunder, and I think at that time it was for Paramount, that flopped. Because they spent so much money into getting these shots. Like it was a lot of extra money. They spent like, I want to say $300,000 just on like the clothes for people to have like actual authentic racing clothes. And it was just, they went way over budget. And I think it actually made like a little money, but not a lot. And they actually got cut, released from their deal from Paramount after that. Now then they kind of righted the ship with Bad Boys. Cause that was a good action movie with Will Smith and Martin Lawrence. And I think it had a sequel to that as well. And then The Rock, a lot of people love The Rock. That's one of my favorite Sean Connery movies, him and Nick Cage. And that kind of started Nick Cage on his, you know, rise with the action movies. Cause he done Con Air too. And that was a Bruckheimer film. Did you see Con Air?
I have never actually watched Con Air.
Yeah. It's a pretty interesting film. It's an interesting concept. You take your prisoners and escape, but it's just, you know, not in a prison. It's on a plane, you know, up in the air. So it's a pretty cool little film.
Yeah. I know what it's about. I've never sat down and watched it.
Yeah. It's a cool film. Well, look at what was some of your most memorable moments on the set for Halloween Kills? Because like you said, you got a much larger part here in the second one. What was some of your favorite scenes to film or things you've seen or, you know, experiences that you had on there?
Everything at the bar, I really liked. That entire, my whole first week was shooting things at, you know, the bar that everybody's in at the beginning of the movie. And we had a ton of extras on set, everybody in Halloween costumes, which was really cool. I was like, oh, look at this. Like, you know, we spent that week got like some of those calls were a little earlier and then they got just later and later and later. And then eventually it's just like, okay, well, these are just night shoots now.
Yeah.
But like, it was really cool. It was a good week to like sort of get my footing, or, you know, I kind of walked on the set and, you know, you do so many smaller, you do like under fives or like, you know, these sort of day player roles and stuff where you're in for like a day or two. I've done plenty of those. And I always try and stay out of the way until I'm needed. Right. It film's a machine. And for me, it's like, show up, hit your marks, say your lines, don't stop the machine from running.
Yeah.
On Halloween Kills from the very beginning, it was really interesting to be a part of the machine, right. To sort of be there every day. So, once we started filming, I had to get used to the idea of like, oh, I'm not like visiting the set. I'm not, you know, this is me as part of the cast being a part of the machine. So, you know, being comfortable, you know, taking time and sort of like not having to stay out of the way was really cool. And I had to get used to it fast, but I also was able to like, I can stand over here and watch a take. Oh, that's really cool. All right, great. Like, I can just sit and observe and watch the creative team like plan shots and like the camera department set up. Like, this is all great just for me. Like you said, as somebody who cares a lot about how movies are made, as somebody who is, you know, who makes films, I wanted to have that seat as well. So if I wasn't in front of the camera, like I was lurking somewhere just to watch departments work, just to watch, you know, David and Attila, our AD, like plan where we were going for the rest of the night and solving problems on the fly. Like those were some of my favorite moments from a set, was just being in that environment and having time to be in that environment. You know, you there for 4 weeks, like I got to pick up a lot of stuff and like sort of soak in a lot of stuff. And then, you know, I mean, working with Kyle and Nancy and Richard and Mike, Anthony Michael Hall, like,
yeah.
You know, they're all lovely, lovely people to work with. Like, you know, Anthony Michael Hall's a film icon, and he from day one, from the very beginning, is like super warm, super accepting guy. Like, definitely, like, you know, I showed up on set. At no point did he make me feel like any less of a scene partner, and I really appreciated that because, you know, you get somebody who's an indisputable film legend, like, you know, who's enjoying working with you back, then it's like, okay, great. Like, and now I have to respect that he considers me an equal. Like, let's get to work. Like, let's go. Right. Right? And just some of that stuff was like, just fun to shoot, like really like fun to like watch and do. I mean, everything in the car, slight spoilers, I guess, for anybody who like, you stop listening now, go watch Halloween Kills and then you can come back. But, all the stuff in the car, you know, that took a week of filming, like lots of rehearsal time, lots of prep. just like, man, I got to spend a whole week standing next to like the Michael Myers mask. I got to be up close to James Courtney, who plays Michael. Great guy, super cool, super fun scene partner. And like, but also like, come on, man. Like, how often do you get to like sit in a car and be like this close from the Michael Myers mask. Yeah. Right? Like I got to touch it. Like I was like, okay, this is really cool. This is awesome right here. Like, and then, you know, getting, getting pretty brutally killed was actually really,
I was going to get to that. Before you mentioned the car scene. Now I think sometimes people don't grasp how long it takes to film something that you as the viewer, it rolls through in 5 minutes. You know, you don't realize how much work, blood, sweat, tears, whatever is put in to those types of things. Now that film, that scene there involving that car, I mean, I guess maybe just the one where he actually gets on the car and starts coming in there and taking people out one by one. I mean, you said that took about 4 weeks to shoot?
No. So for context, right? Everything that happens to us at the bar, the car crash, the, you know, Carmella getting out of the car and trying to get, like, everything that happened to the bar, that we shot that over a week.
Okay.
It also then took a week just to film the scene at the park. Okay. So like that scene at the park is maybe 7 minutes of movie time.
Yeah, that's
right?
What I was referring
between
to. Yeah.
Lindsay yelling at the kids, Michael attacking the car, people dying, Lindsay hiding in the water. That took a week to film. And it's like comparatively 7 minutes. The previous 30 minutes also took a week to film. Right. So it's just, you know, it's some of that stuff. The attack on the car, like there's just a lot of moving pieces. There was a lot of different setups. There are a lot of effects, like some of the stuff, like individual shots would take all night to set up just because, you know, you blow somebody's head off, like somebody blows their own head off. Like that requires like the whole setup beforehand. It requires stunt doubles. It requires like special head pieces and costume pieces. Like, you know, that took hours to film. Like one whole night was basically spent on that. So, you know, that kind of stuff, like it's crazy. You know, somebody watches the movie and like you said, it flies by in like 5 minutes and I'm watching it going, well, that was a week of our lives. Yeah. Those 5 minutes was a week of our lives. Also being in the backseat of a car for a week is a long time to be acting in the back seat of a car for a week. For an entire week, all I did was sit in the back seat of a car and like react to stuff. And it was really cool. It was very eye-opening, no pun intended.
Yeah.
It's also one of the places where like, oh cool, nobody ever does anything like, how do you do something like this? Let's figure it out. And everybody on set, I'm like, hey, how are we going to do this? You know? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know how specific we want to get into like the details of it for any, again, if haven't watched the movie yet,
yeah,
you should.
No, I wanted to get to the kill eventually. Cause it's,
yeah,
I mean, let's get this out of the way. And I think it's pretty well known by then. If you're a fan, you've seen the clips. Michael is on a different level of killing in this whole movie. I mean,
it's pretty brutal. Yeah.
He comes out of that basement where it left off from the first one. And I mean, he takes out what, 7-8 firemen, you know, right off the rip. But your death scene, in my opinion, is up there pretty high, man. I mean, that was a pretty brutal. I mean, you're up there pretty high on that list.
Thank you. It was really cool. It was the first thing they told me about the movie when they said, hey, we're bringing you back. When I finally got confirmation that they were bringing me back in the movie, it was basically, hey, you're getting killed. You need to go to LA for makeup stuff. And then, and that was the first thing I did. The first thing I did was getting a mold taken so they could create the prosthetics and stuff. I didn't read the script until I was getting on the flight. So I knew I was dying, but I didn't know anything else about the movie or my character, what we were going to do with bringing this character back until, like I said, I was already on the way to like prep the death scene.
Right.
But yeah, that's an example of something that like we had to figure it out because, you know, the way we do that shot is it's two different shots. Everything after the stab of like me with, you know, blade out of my eye bleeding, all of that's practical. We did all of that. That's all one take of one night where we put that prosthetic over my eye, And I sat in makeup for an hour and a half putting that all on. And then they say action and he lets go and I bleed out. And it's just me reacting to the bleed out and stuff. That, I mean, that was a whole night, basically. Like, that took a long time during one of the nights. And then the actual stabbing is funny because we filmed it in reverse.
Oh, okay.
That's how we had to do it. Like, basically, it's, we started with me, like, in a position of, like, having been stabbed. And then on action, like Jim pulls the, it's just a handle. There's no blade, obviously. He pulls the handle away and I like react. And then we go back to like right the setup right before. Mm-hmm. And then when we play it back, it's like from this to up. And that was really hard because we had to like, they basically were like, hey, we're going to film this in reverse. Do you think you can do that? And I was like, I don't know. Let's try it. And then we did a couple takes and then they had me come look at them and I watched them play it back in reverse so that I could see what it looked like. And I was like, oh, I need to snap my head more here.
Yeah.
And again, you're planning basically for on action, a reverse movement that when they play it will look good. And I don't know. I think it came out pretty well. People seemed, every time I've watched it with audiences a couple of times now. The reactions are always like, and I'm like, yes, good. If an entire crowd of people has no choice but to yell out during your death, then I think you've got a good death going.
Right, and especially in that movie, like I said, the total kill count, I'm not sure exactly what it is, but it's probably higher than any other Halloween movie that I think I've seen.
Easily, it's got to be. Easily. I mean,
I'm sure it's out there somewhere. Somebody's already counted it up, but it's definitely well beyond. You might have to go, I don't even know if I could think of a horror movie offhand where somebody's killed that many people. I mean, I don't think Freddy, Jason ever got that many.
I mean, it's got to be in the 20s.
Yeah.
I think he's got to kill at least a good, depending on how many firefighters there are and how many people there are in that final scene.
Yeah, that town meeting that had that between those meeting, two scenes.
He's got to be in the 20s in this movie alone. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was, I seen a picture the other day. It was like a still frame of everybody around Michael. And it was like, it said, this one woman was determined to get hers. She's holding an iron.
An iron. The Iron Lady? God, yeah. The Iron Lady is my favorite. Every time when I first saw that, I wasn't there that night for that part. So when I first saw the movie, I saw the lady with the iron. I was like, I don't know who she is. I hope she's in the next one. Tell me her backstory in the next one. She showed up with an iron. Like, just whatever you got, just bring it.
Now, when y'all filmed this one, was this also down here or more? This was in the Wilmington area.
It was in Wilmington. Yeah. We filmed in Wilmington for a month. Yeah.
Okay. Now, was any of that filmed down here in Charleston or not so much with this one?
None of it was. They filmed the whole thing in Wilmington. And I think the next one, Savannah, maybe. I don't know. Okay. Don't ask me. I'm not there.
Okay. Now, when did you guys shoot Halloween Kills?
September. We started in September of 2019.
Okay. So you started in September.
And wrapped late October.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember mid-October. Last year when it got pushed back for a year, and I'm sure they did that for the theater revenue not being there when the theaters were shut down. So I understood from a financial point why they had to do it. Now, as a fan, I'll admit I was pissed because they had just dropped that trailer and it's like they're riding off on the truck and then they see the fire trucks passing them, you know, and that just automatically lets you know, man, I like it when movies do that, when they would pick up right where the other one left off and you kind of have that continuation of the story. And I thought that was so cool and I was jacked for it. I was like, man, I'm ready to go. I want to see this. And it was like, yeah, it's going to be pushed till 2020, and I'm just like, or 2021 or whatever it was, a year later, and I was just like, man, that sucks. But I was kind of like,
you were upset. I've got pictures on my phone I haven't been able to show anybody for 2 years.
Oh man, that had to be brutal.
I got stories I haven't been able to tell. People have been like, hey, like, I was like, I've been telling people, I'm in Halloween Kills. People being like, okay. I'm like, no, I'm not just like in the background of Halloween Kills. Like, I'm one of its main characters, but nobody knows what that means. Like, for 2 years, like, I was upset. But I also, you know, I was upset too. I was really upset. Fans were really upset. But man, like, once opening weekend got here and I got to watch that movie in the theater with like horror fans, like I was like, oh, I'm so glad they waited, because you wouldn't have gotten that experience. Like, it's a really cool, you know, it's a really cool horror movie because it's got a ton of kills, it's got laughs, it's got like, it's got the stuff that people go to a horror movie to see in the theater. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I think holding it was the right call for the movie, honestly, like for the movie's sake, I think it was the right call.
I agree with it in hindsight, because like I said, it's the number one movie in America right now at the box office. So they definitely made the right call. Cause you think about all the theater revenue that, you know, they would have lost out if they'd done a straight to DVD or, you know, straight to cable or however the streaming services that they have. And this one's even on Peacock. I think you got to have Peacock Premium, I believe.
Nope, you just got a Peacock.
Like, oh, if
you
just have it regular at all. People. Okay, all right. Yeah, I've got it. I can't even remember last time I watched it. My son watches it because he likes the WWE Network transferred over to Peacock, so that's why he has it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, so even with that, I'm sure some people probably watched it at the house, but it's still banging numbers at the theater, and that's great for you guys, man. Well, listen, I'm super happy the movie's doing good. You know, you got The Righteous Gemstones. You say you were in that. What have you got coming up down the line that we can look forward to catching you in?
I am currently working on a voiceover project, like an animated voiceover series that should be out next year, as well as I've earlier this year recorded a dramatic podcast for iHeartRadio. That'll be out next year. And then Righteous Gemstones. And then I'm constantly working on stuff. I've got some shoots lined up, a couple of movie projects I'm gonna work on beginning of next year. So yeah, I mean, a couple of audio performances, and then Righteous Gemstones are the next things that are already in the can, I should say.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, and you know, always I'm always posting about new stuff or talking about new stuff. So follow me on social media. People will see where I'm at.
Yeah, absolutely. You're on Facebook there, you're on Instagram. What are all your handles so people can find you?
People can follow me on Instagram at Michael Smallwood Forever. You can follow me over on Twitter at Mike Loves Gushers. They're my favorite candy. So that's why it's my Twitter handle. I would say that people can just send me boxes of Gushers, but like, no, don't do that. I feel like that's a terrible decision. So you can follow me on Instagram or over on Twitter. And yeah, like I said, I post all sorts of, I post about projects that I've got coming up. I have a podcast as well. If you're a fan of the NBC show Community,
yes,
I host a podcast called Welcome to Greendale. That's my wife and I, taking a friend of ours who has never seen Community through it episode by episode and, you know, processing it and reliving it. And that's been a lot of fun. So, we're about 80 episodes in right now. We're in like deep into season 4, and it's going to end next year, and I don't know what I'm going to do because I won't have Community to watch anymore.
Yeah, a lot of the shows now, they're coming out with podcasts about it where stars. I'm a huge TV or Sopranos fan. Like, to me, that was one of the best TV shows of all time, like hands down, just the acting, the writing, everything. And Michael Imperioli and Steve Sciarippa, who in the series they were Christopher Moltisanti and Bobby Bacalieri, they're doing a Talking Sopranos podcast, and they go through every episode one by one, and they'll bring on people from the show, you know, on down to directors, photographers, you know, people that just had a few episodes, whatever the case, and then they recap the episode as far as, you know, what it took to shoot it and things like that. Well, that's what they're saying, is they're getting all this mail. They're like, listen, we love you two guys. We love the banter back and forth. You know, what are you going to do when it's over, when you hit your last episode? Which I'm waiting on that to find out if what they think about him, if he died or whatever. But yeah, I don't know if you start this out with this, oh, we're going to do this, and that's going to last us a long time. Well, then when you get there, then it's like, you know, what next after that? What can you go to keep them hooked? I don't know. They said they're not going to do anything else. They said they're just going to let it be.
And we might not either. You know, we came up with this idea. Community hit 10 years in 2019, and that was when we started the podcast, and we're big fans. We always wanted to do the show. And, you know, we've had people listen to us. We've got a good little following. We've had a writer from the show on. Megan Gantz joined us, took a break from writing Mythic Quest to come be on our show. That's awesome. And, you know, but I think when we're, I don't know what we'll do when we're done. Maybe we'll be like, all right, Sadia, what else haven't you watched? Or we just will, you know, we'll be done and we'll move on to other projects. I don't know. But right now we're having a good time. It's a great way, Kyle, what a great way to like rediscover a TV show you love. Yes. Having to watch it one episode at a time, week by week, and then discuss it. Like, I guess I'm telling everybody, if there's a TV show you really love and you constantly binge it, I don't know, start a podcast. So you have to watch one episode a week so that you can get back to like really appreciating it.
Yeah. What's what if you had to give me one of your favorite TV shows, what's your favorite TV show?
The Wire.
The Wire.
The Wire is my favorite TV show of all time.
Yeah. It's hard to beat the acting in that, man. I always said you got Sopranos and you got The Wire, and that's your Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant debate. You know, you got,
I mean, there are other shows I really love. I love the good, I have a small list of what I consider perfect TV. There's nothing bad. No, there's no episodes to replace. Great show all the way around. Perfect endings. The Wire is one of them. Mm-hmm. I think The Good Place is one of them. Mm-hmm. I think BoJack Horseman is one of them. I think BoJack Horseman's perfect from start to finish. But I, you know, it's not a deep roster, you know.
Right.
I'm actually rewatching The Sopranos right now. My wife and I are watching it. She's never seen it before. I've never seen it all the way through. I've seen bits and pieces mm-hmm. here and there, like a season here, three episodes here.
Yeah.
And rewatching it, it's great. But yeah, no, my favorite show of all time is The Wire, hands down, no question.
Yeah, we got to sit down with J.D. Williams, who played Bodie.
I know. I was so jealous. Look at that. I was like, come on, man. Bodie, what are we doing?
Yeah. Oh,
he was one of the best characters in TV history.
Yeah. And we talked about how that night, you know, they killed Michael B. Jordan, a young, very young Michael B. Jordan in the
baby Michael B. Michael Baby Jordan.
Yeah. And he was giving some insight there, but he was really worried of not working again after that scene, you know. And that's what, like, we were kind of discussing earlier with your death and here. He was trying to tell him that, look, as an actor, you know, you want a great death, something to remember you by. You know, you don't want to just be this average go out. You want to have that, you know, going out in style, so to speak. And everybody remembers when Wallace got, you know, taken out. I mean, you could tell it was that thing where even they didn't want to do it, even though they knew it had to be done. They didn't want to do it. And obviously, you know, he didn't want to die. But that was a great show, man. And we're losing a lot of people off of that show. It's really sad.
And you said something just then too, I especially about Halloween Kills, right? Like, you know, people have asked me, like, man, do you wish they hadn't killed you and that you could be in the next one? And I'm like, no, man, they killed me great. Like, it's an incredible death. People constantly talk about, I got to do some really cool stuff while filming it. It's visually amazing. Mm-hmm. It's visceral. And it's one that people will remember. And in this franchise, in horror especially, but like this franchise, like, come on, man. Michael Myers got to stab me in the face with one of his knives. Like, that's huge. He doesn't, like, if you go back and look at the movies, like, Michael Myers doesn't even kill that many people with knives, right? But we think of him. We think of the butcher knife whenever we think of that character. But how many characters have actually been killed by it? More, maybe, in this movie now because of the final scene. But, like, how many characters have actually been killed by it? Like, I have that honor and that distinction. And, like, for me, that's an honor. Like, that's something I'm going to get to carry. That's something I'll get to, like, go and talk to fans about forever now. Is that, like, it'll be like, oh, man, your death scene was, like, the coolest part of that movie. Like, yeah, I'd rather have that than, like, a handful of scenes in all three movies. Like, I'm so glad that I got this really cool opportunity to, like, have one of his, you know, cinema's greatest monsters.
Yeah, for sure.
Ruin my face.
another knife scene in there was, I think, is it Lenny Clark? Is that his name? Where they were at the house and he stabbed him with like six different knives.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, see, I watched him. I don't know. It was a TV show that was on FX and it was kind of around the same time The Shield and Nip Tuck were on, but it was called Rescue Me, where mm-hmm. it was about firefighters in New York. And he had a role on there for a couple seasons. He was funny. And the way he talks and his kind of high pitched squeals and everything, it would just made me think of Rescue Me. And I enjoyed that little tidbit because he opens up the door. And I think he slams it. He's like, there's this huge guy in the bathroom. And then, you know, obviously they kind of meet their end when it comes out. But he was, did you see him or work with him at all? I know
nope,
movie wise,
nope,
that was
a chance to work
close.
With him at all. in fact, while they were filming that stuff, we were like outside that house that they were using, like rehearsing stuff. So like, no, I didn't, I got to go over that way a little bit, but I didn't get to meet him at all.
Yeah. I know, even though you're watching the movie and you're like, well, that happened right before this. A lot of times that's, you know, you're not shooting it that way. A lot of times you're shooting out of sequence a lot. I know some movies, you know, people don't typically, I think, like to do it, especially main characters, of shooting like the endings first, because you don't really know how to carry yourself. You don't know what that person's really been. You might've read it on a page, but by the time you get done filming all that stuff, you can carry it a little bit different. So I've heard, you know, different interviews where people say they do not like to film like some of the last scenes of the movie in the beginning. And I know sometimes, depending, you know, maybe on weather or whatever, budgets or whatever, you might have to do that, but I can see where you would want to wait to the end personally.
It just depends on, I mean, movie sets or movie production schedules are always about location availability. Yeah. And, you know, location availability schedules, like what, you know, every piece has to all come together. So every week was a different location mm-hmm. on this movie. And for me, it just so happened that my first scenes, kind of the first scenes for everybody, but my first scenes were like the opening scenes for me. Right. So, yeah. That was really great. And then, but the next week was the car stuff. And then my third week was the week that we shot, like, you know, us arriving to the hospital and joining up with Tommy. So like mm-hmm. that was slightly out of order, but you know, I got to start, you know, with this beginning stuff. Like, so I think my first scene that I shot was the very first scene that I'm in.
Yeah.
Which was, I was like, oh, great. I get to like build this in order, but it's, you know, it's a luxury. Like not everything is, I've certainly done it the other way where it's been like wildly out of order. And
right.
You know, you just have to adapt basically and just say that, like, all right, well, this is what we're filming right now. And this is what we're doing. This is where we are in the movie. Like, you know,
right. Well, I tell you what, man, I am just super glad you could come on the show. I'm really glad you could put it out there. Now, one thing we'd like to do here on the show is we kind of ask for people to give, you know, advice in whatever field they're in. If someone was looking to do this, like I said, you taught for a little while, you had a desire to get in here, whether it be in front of the camera, behind the camera. I think a lot of times, especially, you know, nowadays, people are kind of pushed towards, you know, getting a profession and certain careers. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you have a desire to do something in film or television or the arts or anything like that, theater, you know, what would you give someone with those kind of ambitions coming up, like as a high schooler fixing to graduate? What would be your, you know, directions for them? Where would they go? What classes would they try to take? Things like that.
I think my first piece of advice would be don't listen to anybody who isn't in the industry. They don't know what they're talking about. So, you know, a lot of times people will say like, oh, well, it's really hard. You need to have a fallback, or it's really impossible. You need to be in like one or two places. And it's like, okay, but those people don't know what they're talking about, so don't listen to them. Listen to people who have been in the industry. Like, that's my first piece of advice. Like, please find people who have actually done this work and ask them about how to do it, because they'll know, like, that, you know, that random negative aunt of yours who yeah. like has seen movies about Hollywood or saw La La Land. It's like, it looks hard. Like they don't know what they're talking about. So that's my first piece of advice. And then my second, I mean, piece of advice is, you know, like getting started, there's no path, right? Like my right. path is completely different from someone else's. There is no accepted path. And I think that what's cool about that is really it's not so much like getting a foot in the door. It's basically like, okay, great, but this building has like 8 doors and mm-hmm. 90 windows. Just climb in somewhere. Yeah. So that would be my other big piece of advice, is like find your way in. I went to college and started doing this in junior high. I went to college for it and studied acting, and like, you know, I took that path, but like mm-hmm. you can just take acting lessons from, you know, people who have worked in the industry. Like most cities have somebody teaching acting lessons somewhere. Yeah. Most cities have some sort of theater scene or performing scene. Most cities have some sort of film community. Find your local film community, introduce yourself and say, hey, I want to get involved in some way. And you know, learn. Like there's no, there's no way that you should have started. There's no time period where you should have started. It's just a matter of like starting, figuring out your path and walking down it. It takes a long time. It's very like, you know, it takes a long time. It can, again, different path for different people. It can take a long time, but you know, finding a path and walking down it and being perseverant, not taking no for an answer, basically, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, my number one piece of advice would be to, like, I don't know, talk to people in the business. Don't talk to just random people who don't know what they're talking about, because they're just going to be negative about it because they think it's really hard. And it is, but it's not impossible. Like I'm in Halloween Kills. It's not impossible, right?
Yeah, and that's why I really wanted to reach out to you. And I'm like, you know, this guy, he seems like he's real down to earth, and he did it. You know, he taught, you know, he done his thing, he done his time, and he's in Halloween Kills. How awesome is this? Like you said, to be in this centerpiece of horror franchise history, you know, like we spoke earlier, you got Freddy, you got Jason, you got Michael Myers. Those are the top names in the horror genre that stretch all the way back, you know, to the first one. I don't know, was it late 70s or early 80s?
78.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's stretching decades upon decades there. And here you are, and you're getting to take a knife right through the jaw into the eye there from them. I mean, that's some cool stuff. I let you know, like you said, don't let anybody outside of what you're trying to accomplish dictate a route or path you take. I mean, I remember, like we spoke earlier, I think they actually put an ad out looking for people to send in like headshots for like background work and stuff like that.
Every movie that films that needs extras does that in every town they do. Charleston does it here. There's a whole thing. There are whole places you can sign up to be like an extra for every movie that comes through. Like it's not impossible to work in film. It just, like I said, it requires finding one of the many open windows and ajar doors in this, right, in that building. There's not just the one, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, as far as like, and it's weird because like specific advice, it's like, well, I don't know, this is what worked for me specifically, but it might not work for you depending on where you are and what, right, you know, where you're willing to go and stuff like that. But like, you know, there's a bunch of different ways in, and you just got to find yours, and experience is your best friend. So like getting as many opportunities to be on sets as possible. And like I said, just finding a community, finding people who are also looking to do the work and working together to get better. I mean, that's step one.
And like you said, in those communities, I'm sure it doesn't take long to find people that have these passion projects that they want to throw together. So, you know, offer your help, you know, offer some ideas. I'm sure you'll be able to team up with somebody that, you know, likes your idea, or you might like their idea, and you're just, you know, willing to help, and what you add to their project can make it just a little bit better. So for sure, I love to see things like that. I love to see people still interested in going that route, because I mean, like you said, is it easy? No, it's not easy. Everybody would be doing it, but there's a reason new movies come out, you know, every week. There are people that has to film them, and that's not just the people that you see in front of the camera. There's a lot of work that, like you said, goes on behind the scenes, and that's what, you know, you alluded to. You're studying it. You're a student of the game. If you're not in front of it, you know, doing your thing, acting, then you want to see what it is they're doing behind the scenes, because that don't do nothing but just up your game as to what you can do. Because, I mean, that's why a lot of these guys went from, you know, being in front of the camera to directing their own movies. You know, Bob De Niro done one. Bronx Tale was his directorial debut. Mm-hmm. Clint Eastwood's another one that's, you know, done some films, you know, from behind the camera. So it's definitely something to keep in mind.
Yeah. And it's also one of those things too, where like, you know, like you said, if it were easy, everyone would be doing it. So it is really hard, but it also, you know, the nature of it means that it's hard in a way that like it automatically weeds out people who can't.
Yes.
Because, you know, it requires a certain level of drive. It requires a certain level of perseverance that like most people don't actually have. Like,
yeah,
you know, it will always be easier to not go after it because it's difficult to get. And the difference in anybody who gets there and doesn't are the people who like don't stop going after it and don't stop getting better. Right. So,
yeah, for sure.
I mean, yeah, that's my advice for it, I guess.
One of my favorite actors, and we talked about the film Pulp Fiction earlier, is Samuel Jackson. And I want to say he was maybe, what, late 40s by the time he was actually starting to really get those big, big roles. He had been in a few roles here and there, but he was pretty later on in life before he started doing these roles, and it took that one, and then it snowballed from there on out. And I mean, obviously he don't need to do a thing for the rest of his life. He's probably pretty set money wise, but I mean, just a great, fantastic actor.
Like I said, it's not about age. Like, you know, some people don't even start the journey until they're much later in life. And some people, you know, it takes them decades of, mm-hmm. of throwing their, you know, throwing their head against the wall before they finally make a dent. And both those paths are valid. The difference is, like, there are some people who get there after 20 or 30 years of nothing, and they finally get there because they don't stop. Those 20, 30 years are full of them, like, perfecting their craft and constantly working on it. I mean, you know, Mad Men, right? Famously, the creator of Mad Men was, like, tired of not creating anything, had been in LA for 20 or at least years, and was always pitching shows, and they never got picked up. And then when somebody finally said, let's make this, cast all these people who had been in Hollywood banging their head against the wall, right? I mean, John Hamm was a school teacher before Mad Men plucked him out of, like, somebody who was like, yeah, I tried it for a while and it wasn't working, so I was doing something else, right? Like, it's, you know, there's a bunch of people like that where it's like, oh, yeah, no, they've been trying to do this forever and it finally happened for them because they don't give up. They don't stop, you know? And it requires that. It requires that, like, yeah. that tenacity and that hunger.
And if you're somebody that watches a lot of films like me, you know, from the 80s and 90s, you'll spot people in there that maybe had, like, a very minor role or a mediocre role in certain films, maybe in a few films, but then now, you know, they're blowing up. And one example was, he's been in a ton of stuff. He's been in The Client. He was in a small role in Bad Boys. His name's Kim Coates. And mm-hmm. he was just kind of like usually a henchman or a mobster or a gangster, you know, a bad guy with a gun. And then when he landed the role of Tig in Sons of Anarchy, that show blew up. It went off the rails. Then he had a show on Netflix called Bad Blood, which is centered around the mob in Montreal. So, I mean, now he's just, you know, everybody knows who he is, where before you would just say, hey, that's that guy from, you know, the other movie. You might not know him by name, but that one particular show, he plucked away. And when that show came, he killed it in that role, and it, you know, it just blew up for him. So, you know, the message here, people, to everybody is, you know, like he said, don't take advice from someone that's definitely not in this industry, but just keep plugging along, man. You know, you don't ever know when that break is going to come. And we don't have to be talking about acting here. This isn't anything in your life, whether you're, you know, a painter or whether you work on cars or whatever. You could have that meeting or have that one client that turns, you know, everything you do in the right direction and a better direction that you were going before. So just keep pushing, man. That's our message here for sure. Michael, we want to thank you for coming on the show, man. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for having me. I had a good time.
Yeah, I did too. Well, look, if anybody has not seen Halloween Kills, I don't know what you're waiting on. Maybe you're waiting to this week.
What are you doing? Go see it.
Yeah, go ahead and go see it, especially this week. I mean, you got Halloween around the corner, so what better? I mean, you know, binge watch them all. Start from the first one, but make sure you get Halloween Kills in there. Because I'm going to tell you, this is a doozy of a movie. Michael has got an attitude, and he takes it out on a lot of people, including this man right here, Michael Smallwood. Michael, we are glad you could stop by Crime and Entertainment. Anytime you want to drop back in, man, give us a holler. You're more than welcome, and we appreciate you so much for doing this interview.
Thanks a ton for having me, man. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. All right, everybody. God bless. What an interview there about Mr. Smallwood. I mean, that man's got quite a story. You know, he's taught, you know, film history here for a little bit. You know, started off going to read for, you know, some minor roles, and then that grows to on into becoming into the sequel of this movie in a little bit bigger part. And in my opinion, one of the better kills in the whole movie. And like we spoke about earlier, with a 30 plus body count, for your kills to be considered one of, if not the best, hot damn, that's some good work there. What do you think?
I agree, even though, you know, from a character standpoint, I've been the sharpest characters you see in a horror movie, but you know what they're there for. They're the cannon fodder to get the kill count up. And they delivered on that.
Yeah, the whole fire department there kind of, that bumped him up to like 10 right out the gate, or basement, I guess you could say. Yeah, he knocked those off pretty quick.
Modern day modern day Bill Goldberg when he had the streak and those counts would go off by 10 by taking out
that
a
is,
faction of guys.
That is a good way to put it. Mr. Smallwood would probably appreciate that. That man's a huge wrestling fan. As you heard in the interview there, we talked about, he said he had been a fan since WrestleMania 10, and that right off the bat rung me to Shawn and Razor and their ladder match. So that man's got a wealth of wrestling knowledge as well. But I really liked how he talked about his death scene, you know, with the knife going up through the eye, how they had to shoot that in reverse. You know, he said he had the prosthetics on there that he had to keep on, so that was kind of after the knife went in. But as far as the knife going in, they actually shot that in reverse. I can see where that would be a little bit challenging for an actor to film, you know, to act out the scene in reverse. I can see where that would probably throw a monkey wrench into things there. You probably have to, like he said, look at it, see what it looks like, see what you have to critique. Have you run across anything like that in your film time here, recording anything where you had to do anything backwards? Do you have any insight you want to share on that?
I've done it on YouTube, actually, but certainly nothing dealing with prosthetic things like that. I commonly will do a close-up and then step back, or a pull, as they say in the industry. Basically just move back for whatever you're shooting in reverse. The reason is because if you do the close-up part first, you can have it in sharp focus. And then when you go into the computer, you'll just reverse it. Literally, it's called reverse in about any editing app. So I've done it to that extent. Definitely not a extent of actors and prosthetics in a whole crew around.
Well, I think the prosthetics come on after that shot. Like, they had the prosthetics that they used, but before they cut to the prosthetics, that was the scene where the knife actually going in. That was the one that was kind of filmed in reverse, because you're seeing the knife handle. Obviously, there wasn't a blade on there. That was put in later. But, you know, that was the part that was filmed in reverse. I just thought that was really neat. And, you know, how we talked about, you know, you're looking there and you're seeing a 5-6 minute scene where Michael's on top of the car and he pretty much just takes everybody out. And that took them a couple weeks to shoot. You know, I mean, that just, as a viewer, and we talked about it in the interview, as a viewer, you're watching this and you're like, oh, you know, that was pretty cool. And that only burned 5 minutes, but the work that's put into making some of these movies, I just don't think people really grasp the work that these guys have to do. And like he said, you know, a week or so of nothing but in the back seat of the car, people could say, I want to be an actor, I want to be an actor, but you got to sit in the back of a car for over a week at night all the time. That can get a little, well, one, uncomfortable, two, probably redundant. So, I mean, it's not all, you know, sunshine and rainbows, but at the end of the day, like he said, to go and have a chance to get killed off by one of your favorite horror villains, I mean, I definitely go ahead and put in the work. Jaeger, if you had to get killed off by one of your favorite horror movie villains, who would it be?
Oh, it's Leatherface. I got a story for that real quick. We did a haunted, ride, even though it was on this big conveyor belt. And there was different parts to it. And the end of the ride, you went through the haunted house like a lot do, and we got chased by Leatherface. Mm-hmm. And that was like a dream come true in the weirdest way. That is your answer. I kind of got to live it out a little bit.
I'm sure if anybody was lagging behind, it was probably you and got caught there, huh?
I just pushed the kid down, took his popcorn, and here you go, old Leather. Take this one instead. Not me. I got a feature. I'm kidding. Hey, it wasn't a fast sprint. You know, just like that movie Magic that looks like they might be running fast. It was a brisk jog. Leatherface wasn't really booking it either. That was probably chasing number 44 an hour for him. So. Well, probably had a couple of Leatherfaces in the back, like a person who goes to football games in the mascot outfit.
Yes.
Might have been changing them out.
Had some change up there. Had some relief Leatherfaces, so to speak.
Leatherface was doing push-ups on a board in a crowd or something.
Now, I don't know if you remember this, but you remember some years back, I guess this has probably got to be pushing 17, 18 years ago, when you and I went down to Tennessee. You remember that?
Yeah.
Okay, you remember the little haunted trip that went on?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so when we come out, I think that was a point where it was over, and there was this huge fucking guy in the chair with the chainsaw. And nobody knew if he was real or not. Like, it was kind of like, you expected him to pop up, but then like the first person went by, the second person, third person, and you and I were in the back, And as we come walking up, it's like all the lights and shit are on, you know, and it's got a hallway you walk down. I kind of walk up just to see if I could see anybody behind the mask. Didn't see anybody. Kind of tapped on the, you know, the gut, so to speak. And it did kind of feel like it wasn't anything there. I'm like, oh, I guess it's just a fake. And I turn around and go ahead and start walking down that hall. And I heard that damn chainsaw crank up, and good God almighty, I ain't never been accused of being a fast runner, but I believe I'd have gave McCaffrey a run for his damn money getting the hell out of there. I don't even know what happened. I didn't even turn around to see. I just heard that chainsaw light up. My ass was out of there, boy.
We got a gazelle out here on the run, folks.
I mean, I guess that's the thing there. I mean, you know, if you're that victim in a Jason movie, you don't hear the you don't hear Michael Myers, you know, the sneaky little bastard that he is. He just sneaks up behind you and goes and puts a knife in you. You know, you don't hear Freddy, at least right off the bat, but you hear that damn chainsaw coming at you. I mean, that's gotta be the most terrifying sound, followed by probably what's going to be a very unpleasant experience as soon as he gets a hold to you.
The chainsaw is brilliant because it's definitely, you can consider it part of a soundtrack, but it's a sound effect. It's just unrelenting, the sound of that chainsaw. You brought up the I forgot how iconic that was. Still, I'll stick with Michael Myers as having the best soundtrack in horror because it's more pieces of music. Not a ton more, but I'll give this one to John Carpenter. Still, I stand by my earlier statement, the soundtrack in horror.
Absolutely. Well, folks, we're glad you could tune in with us today. I mean, this has just been a real treat to have that man sit down with us, you know, and all the stuff that he does. He teaches acting classes. He gave us his handles for the social media. Y'all go give that guy a follow. And one of the things that you need to, I definitely want to look it up and look into it. And Jaeger, you probably need to do it too. And I was checking out his IMDb. He's got a play that he did, and the name kind of caught my eye, and he actually stars as Fred. Is Scooby-Doo and the Manson Murders?
So there's a book by Lloyd Kaufman, How to Make Your Own Damn Movie, and he says having the title that catches your eye is important. That's the title that catches my eye.
Well, damn right. I had to ask him about that. I was like, look here, you know, before we get into the obvious, you know, the Halloween kit, what the hell is Scooby-Doo and the Manson Murders? Because that's two things that you don't put together, but I'm very, very damn curious. So I'm going to go check that out. He says it's up on YouTube. So go check that out.
Oh, great.
And I mean, we hope you've seen the movie. If you've seen the movie, you're going to enjoy this a whole lot more. If you haven't seen the movie, you'll still enjoy it because it's a damn good movie. It's on Peacock. If you got that app, go watch it. I prefer to see a movie like this in the theaters myself. What about you, Jaeger? Did you watch it on Peacock or did you go to the cinema?
Yeah, Peacock is on the page tier of Peacock. So everybody can get a free version of it, but there's different levels and tiers for those who don't know. And Peacock's probably got 50 million subscribers, but really less than 4 who are actually in the paid tier. And that's the way that you check out Halloween Kills at home on Peacock if you're inclined to do it that way.
Well, I tell you, I mean, I'm not knocking it, you know, but that's definitely cheaper than going to the cinema, you know. If you're not sure if the old lady's panning out, you don't want to spring all that money for a date, invite her on over to the house and sign up for a month of Peacock and go ahead and knock out Halloween Kills. Maybe you can have an idea if you, you know, want to keep her around there, so to speak, or even a guy, you know, you girls can do the same thing. You know, who am I to judge, but definitely cheaper than going out to the cinema. You're going to spend a lot of money, but there's just really nothing that's going to beat that cinema experience, in my opinion, especially for a good horror movie. You know, I'll go there for some good action stuff, but horror in the cinema, I just don't think there's much else better than that. What do you think on there?
Yeah, it goes back to me and Rob Zombie the second at bat at Halloween and the crowd not feeling it. And we all collectively were on a ride that we were not on board for. And I've actually been in crowds where it almost turned on movies. I think The Witch from 2017 or 18 was one of those movies. And then of course you go in there and have experience where people are absolutely fully on board with it. 2018 Halloween would be an example of that. That crowd was really on the battle, packed house whenever it opened up in 2018. I'm assuming it was around October. So,
oh yeah. And obviously people are on board with this one too. And I mean, you can imagine as a fan, you know, when the trailer dropped for this Halloween last year, and earlier of 2020 during the midst of the pandemic, you know, as we spoke in the interview, it picks up right as the other movie left off. And I particularly love when movies do that. If it's going to be a sequel and you see them riding off in the truck and you see the fire trucks going to the house, so you know they're going to put the fire out. So that's probably how he's going to get out. So it had me so psyched up to see it. And then they had to push it back a whole year, you know, due to the COVID pandemic and everything that's going on. So that had to be, I guess, a little bit disheartening, but I guess it paid off in the long run because now they're reaping all the money from the box office. And I'm sure that was, you know, something the guys want to keep their eye on. Sucks to be a fan, but I do think it did pay off because as we spoke right now, we probably should be talking about Halloween Ends, which is the third installment, but because of things happened the way they did, everything has to be pushed back a year. So next October, we may be going over Halloween Ends. So will it really end? Is that going to be it? Is that going to be end of the shape? Jaeger, what is your take on that?
You know, we got to go reference other horror movies. If Freddy Kills, Final Nightmare was the final one, was it?
It was not. It was not.
That's almost like promoting a wrestling match or a boxing match. This is the last one. No, this is the last one. Really, that time we got you, it's the last one. So we all know the answer. When you do $50 million domestically, Michael's going to get resurrected again.
It kind of reminds me of the Monster Squad. And I can't remember which movie that was they were watching, but he was watching it on the roof of his house. I think, I can't remember, Wolfman, something, one of those movies. And, you know, they were talking about the last time they blew him up, put his head in the blender and mailed the rest of the pieces to Norway. And he's like, nah, that was part seven. So, I mean, I guess if it keeps making money, they're going to keep putting them out. And I mean, Halloween in general, but horror in general as well, is just something people like to be scared, even though they might not necessarily like it for a little bit. They like to be scared, at least, you know, where they know they're going to be safe after the movie's over.
Right.
That's just my opinion. I've always thought that that's where the money is to be made because you can do those movies fairly cheap. We talked about in the interview the idea we had a while back with Caller 13. I still think that'd be a good idea. Probably could be made for cheap. And, you know, who knows what could come out of that. I mean, a lot of people's made a lot of dough off horror movies, man. You look at Blair Witch Project and Paranormal Activity. I mean, granted, we're talking more money than I got can get my hands on, but peanuts in the grand scheme of things and made a fucking shit ton of money.
A $20 million budget was for Halloween Kills and $50 million opening weekend. You're in the black. You juxtapose that against Dune, which had almost $150 million budget. I don't even know if that includes marketing. And it opens with $40 million, but it's done business internationally, but, you know, sticking to the domestic numbers. Not super fantastic, but it also had HBO Max going on. It could have cut into numbers too, where everybody with HBO Max had access to it, unlike with Peacock, right. A small number had access to it. So
I don't know.
There's a lot of moving parts into that.
I don't know if that's Peacock doing all this advertising that they have the movie on their site. It could be, which I guess if they got to pick up the tab for advertising, it probably wasn't a bad idea to partner up with those boys, or if it's just advertising from Halloween side alone. But I have seen a great deal of advertising for that movie when I'm searching the World Wide Web for different things. It's like every other ad is for Halloween Kills. So definitely the marketing, I guess, had some dollars to spread around. I'd be curious to see exactly how those were spread around. And Peacock's kind of picking up the tab on that or what?
It's Universal. You know, Universal owns it.
Yeah.
So it's them. It would be your marketing budget, really, for what you would have for the movie anyway. So there wasn't a partner thing. It's all owned by Universal.
Okay. Are they own Peacock as well?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So NBC Universal. Yeah.
Did not know that.
They will make it.
You learn something new every day here on these podcasts. I'll tell you what. Well, speaking of being scared, you know, we've got Halloween coming up this weekend. And by George, we have a guest that I'm telling you is going to blow your socks off. But it's not necessarily from the name, because you might not know who he is. You may not even know why he's famous, but we will find out, because he is the innovator, the creator of one of the scariest haunted houses in the damn world that nobody as of right now has been able to make it through. And we will get into that. That's going to be a hell of an episode. I'm not even going to say the name. I'm going to keep it quiet. You're going to have to tune in this Sunday when our Halloween episode drops and hear about the scariest haunted house in the world, ladies and gentlemen. And the kicker is, if you want to get involved and maybe go to this thing, you can do it. It's open to the public. You got to do it, sign a few waivers, and you got a few things you got to do to get there, but it doesn't cost a lot of money. I think unless he's changed, I think it only took like a bag of dog food donated to your local shelter would get you admission. And nobody's been able to make it through this thing. I've seen some of the YouTube trailers that they made. I'm a big fan of haunted houses. I don't even know if I would fuck with this one right here. It's going to be a jam up episode. Jaeger, you think you could do it?
Oh yeah. Isn't that what everybody says?
Oh yeah. Right before they're checking out. Yeah. That's exactly what it says.
It was going good until it wasn't going good.
I think I remember that time we was all walking through that haunted house and you were behind me and then I didn't see you again and we got in the car. You were laying in the back seat asleep.
Apparently I got the speed of flash sometimes. I thought I dropped my phone back here. I think you should get that one up as soon as possible. I'm really looking forward to hearing from that guy. I don't know if you want to wait till Halloween, because even I want to hear that installment.
Man, but I'm telling you, his creation that he's done here, his haunted house, is something to look into. So, like I said, I'm not even going to name drop here. I want to keep it all under the hat, so to speak. So you're definitely going to have to tune in for that episode. Folks, we're glad you could sit down with us here and enjoy this episode where we recap Halloween Kills and sat down with one of the stars, Michael Smallwood, a Charleston boy right now, living here in Charleston, South Carolina. He's going to be coming up in the Righteous Gemstones. He's going to be doing a lot of stuff. Look for this man to definitely start making a dent in Hollywood. Super nice guy, and we're glad he could come on the show. I am Hollywood Wade. That was Jaeger Yancey Tedder. And unfortunately, we are out of time. Jaeger, where can they find us next week?
We're going to be right here. However, in the meantime, look for us over on the YouTube. Subscribe there. The Facebook. Follow along right there. Instagram. Give that a follow as well. There's smoke signals. Look through the rain clouds. We're going and broadcasting there as well. And wherever you get your podcast from, your favorite podcast catching app, we are caught up in the net. For your podcasting listening needs. You see, I was getting lost there, pal, but I bought it home. And we'll see you next time on Crime and Entertainment.
You're good, you.